Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Reporting Refugees, a very special episode of Month of Sundays on 666 ABC Canberra. I'm Jamie Cummins.
And I'm Ashley Hamilton. Have you ever wondered what you would do if you felt unsafe in your own country? Have you ever considered what it would be like to leave behind everything you know to start a new life in a new place? Well, today you're going to be meeting some refugees from the Canberra community telling their stories. And today is extra special because the stories that you're hearing are produced by students from the University of Canberra.
So, 6 months ago, we started this project as an assignment for one of our advanced broadcast journalism classes. And it's a very special project because for the first time it's a collaboration between journalism students at UC, music students from the ANU School of Music, and the ABC.
So basically the idea was to go out and to interview refugees and find out what stories that they had to tell. It did seem like a huge task at first. We had never done anything like this before.
Yeah, and it was a very overwhelming concept for me. Initially, I didn't know very much about Australia's position on asylum seeker policy. How about yourself, Ash?
Well, I think it's a really complicated issue that initially I was hesitant to enter into conversations about. I had read a lot in the media about refugees, but I still didn't know very much on the topic.
Me either. And one thing that stood out to me was that I hadn't heard very many personal stories from refugees themselves. And that's what's so great about today's program. You're actually going to be hearing personal stories and about sharing these stories with you.
That's right. But before we get to hear any of them, I decided to find out what people on the street thought about Australian refugee policy.
Was it easy to get people to open up about that, Ash?
Look, it was a tricky topic to get people talking about. It was interesting to find that we weren't alone in our confusion on the topic. We did get some interesting responses and we learnt why people are so confused and divided when it comes to talking about refugees.
Australia's relationship with refugees is a complex one, and every Aussie seems to have their own opinion on our country's asylum issues. However, few know about the past events that have shaped Australia's position on refugee policy. We spoke to Canberra historian and author Anne-Marie Jordans in the hope of answering some commonly asked questions and perhaps raising a few new ones.
In the past, most people were processed offshore. After the Second World War, Australia ratified the UN Convention on Refugees. We just accepted people, mostly very reactively, when there was a crisis. In the time of the White Australia policy and the Cold War, we only accepted white refugees fleeing communism until the Whitlam period in 1973, when we first started to accept people from everywhere. And then after the Vietnam War, there were an enormous number of people in camps who'd fled Vietnam after the fall of Saigon, and we participated in a comprehensive plan of action to clear those camps. It wasn't until under the Keating government they introduced mandatory detention just for initial processing, and then it got worse and worse. And now we've got an enormous number of people in camps all around the world, and nobody's collaborating internationally to clear these camps. I mean, we've done it twice before. I don't see why we can't do it again.
The circulation of misinformation and myths is one of the biggest barriers to understanding the issues affecting refugees and asylum seekers. It seems that although Australians have a lot to say about refugees, not many can define who or what a refugee is.
Short answer, no. But yeah, I could probably figure it. Well, asylum seeker is someone... Oh, no, I thought they were the same thing.
No, not particularly.
I don't think that there is officially, but I think that governments and media like to separate the two.
I have to think about it for a little bit.
You know, that's a good question. I haven't really thought about it. I just tend to think either are in a bad situation.
No, I don't know actually the proper distinction. Maybe I'm not the proper definition. Yeah, for me, those two are interchangeable.
An asylum seeker is someone who is seeking asylum, meaning they're fleeing political, religious, just general physical persecution. And a refugee is someone who's been granted asylum status in another country.
Although only one of the Canberra locals we spoke to was able to give the exact definition of a refugee, many thought there was a lot to improve on when it came to Australia's treatment of refugees and asylum seekers.
What do you think of Australia's attitude as a nation towards refugees?
Basically, people are real crap. They don't actually think about the issues and they just mouth off something that they've heard. Yeah, it's really crap. People just have to start thinking for themselves.
I travel a lot, so I don't really get to hear too much, just a little bit here and there. But personally, I'd like to see open borders.
I think it sucks. I think that we have a lot of space. We have a really great social welfare system. And I think people have things to offer us.
Very good compared to other nations in the world.
Different generations that have different opinions, and certain generations seem to have more clout.
Well, I'm not Australian citizen, but I think Australia should receive the refugees.
I think we're afraid and fear makes us ungenerous.
In the past, we've been really good international citizens in relation to refugees. We were generous and adapted to their needs. We were able to help them settle very successfully. That's the key to our success.
How much are people's views influenced by the Australian media's portrayal of boat people? Media scholars point to countless media articles full of inaccuracies and stereotypes that have had an impact on how Australians view refugees and asylum seekers.
The term asylum seeker has got a special meaning now that it didn't have in the past. The demonisation of asylum seekers is affecting people's reaction to refugees who come in through the UNHCR process. If you can get the community steamed up, people are misled and distracted from the main game.
What do you think of when you hear the term boat people?
I think of people who really need our help. But now, like, yeah, sometimes I think they're queue jumpers.
Desperate people, yep, in horrible conditions on a dangerous voyage.
I guess that recent incident at Christmas Island, the recent incident there is something that comes to mind when I think of boat people.
I just think of a lot of desperation.
I don't consider that being illegal or something. It's out of pretty much out of no choice. They have a family to feed.
People say, oh, they're rich, but they're not. Often it's families who have saved up $5,000-$10,000 in order to get someone away to be free.
I was hearing about one refugee. I think he's in Indonesia last week. I was hearing that he was born in a refugee camp. He was 15, and he's about to just jump on a boat to Australia because he's that desperate to have any kind of life.
The media's portrayal of refugees and asylum seekers has left many people feeling confused about the current political debates over them. How many Australians have actually met a refugee or asylum seeker?
Have you ever met someone who is a refugee?
My name's Jerry, and I moved in with another guy named Jerry and a guy named Ben. And after a couple of weeks, there was a knock on the door and there was people looking for Jerry. And they had guns and badges and all kinds of things. And it turned out he was in breach of his visa. They told us he was in no trouble, and then he got put into detention centre for about 3 months. Because I was in Year 12 at the time, we had a talk about immigration and refugees, and we were told that there weren't white people in immigration detentions in Australia, but it's actually quite wrong, because he was white American, and he was put in detention for about 3 months.
I've been involved with the Sudanese refugees, the Sudanese refugee church at Pierce, and Burmese refugees here as well, with another church in Ainslie. I think the thing is that they like being here. They'd much prefer to be at home if their home was safe.
Most people who have bad ideas about refugees have never met one. It's that human contact, so important. That's where refugees find out how we operate.
Community involvement may be important, but it's also rare, as many asylum seekers spend years in detention centres being processed before they can experience Australian culture.
Detention is not only cruel, but it's unnecessary and it's incredibly expensive. When we had refugees in the past, we accepted them as permanent residents and we encouraged them to become citizens as soon as possible. This would be much more humane and cost-effective. And if they were found not to be refugees and sent back home, they wouldn't be damaged people and they wouldn't be resentful people, and they might have made a few friends in the Australian community and they would have positive attitudes towards Australia.
Do you think that asylum seekers should be allowed to live in our community while they wait for their applications to be processed?
I think it's fine, yeah. It's really about security.
Potentially there is the risk for danger, but at the end of the day, people are people and we shouldn't judge them until they have a reason to be judged.
I would like our governments to say, if in doubt, let them in, not the other way around.
I'm sure they would take that rather than being stuck behind cages.
That was Rachel Glendinning and Ashley Hamilton. You're listening to 666 ABC Canberra on A Month of Sundays, where we're sharing the experiences of refugees in the Canberra community.
And you can get involved in today's program by following the conversation on Twitter. Just use the hashtag #ReportingRefugees to get connected with everyone involved in the project, including the students that produce the stories you're listening to today.
Hi, it's Greg Bayliss here. Each year we hold the Saturday Spruce Up. It's our way of saying thank you to our community. But we can't do it alone and we need your help to get the job done. If you can lend a hand to spruce up the Dorothy Sales Cottage with us on Saturday the 3rd of December, go to abc.net.au/Canberra to register your support. Come on, Willow Spence and I can't do it without you. The Saturday Spruce Up, next Saturday from 6 a.m. on 666 ABC Canberra.
The stories we have for you this morning raise many different issues, one of those being how hard it is to leave your family, friends and career behind to start a new life.
Yeah, imagine working for years to get your medical degree and establish your career, only to give it all up for the safety of your family. That's what Yasmin Arshawi did when she fled Iraq last year with her two sons. In Iraq, she was a successful radiologist, but now she's studying English and medicine full-time. And today, she calls Canberra home.
This is her story.
I decide because I want to keep my two sons alive and I want to bring them to in a safe area so they can grow up without wars and away from conflict area or something like this. So I want them to grow up in a peace. That was my decision to leave the Iraq and come here.
Yasmin Arshawi came to Australia from Iraq last year with her two sons, Mohammed and Abdullah. Iraq's history is steeped in war and conflict. Yasmin grew up during the wars between Iraq and Iran. These wars lasted for more than a decade and consumed most of her childhood.
It was very hard because I keep moving from area to area because there was a war or something. So, yeah, and my father's house collapsed 2 times in the war because of the bomb. Yeah, and we survived. Yeah, so most of our neighbors died, but we survived. I'm lucky. The whole house collapsed. Just we escaped. We in the bathroom. We are, I think, 8 members. My father and my mother and my brother and sister. And we felt the wall like a feather, because you know the action of the bomb. And then we realized that the whole house collapsed. Just the bathroom that we, yeah. We escaped in it.
In 1991, a US bomb targeting an oil station accidentally hit Yasmin's family home nearby, causing the house to collapse again.
This time my father built a shelter or something underneath the house. I think we spent 30 days without seeing the sun, just in the shelter, yeah. So I saw the dead several times in my life.
To cope with the constant turmoil, Yasmin put all her efforts into being a good student.
I love to study. So I was number one in the school every time because you have to take a test before you pass any class, from class to class. And yeah, so it was like a challenge because I like to be number one.
After graduating from university with a degree in medicine, Yasmin worked as a general practitioner before specialising as a radiologist. However, it soon became an unsafe profession, with doctors, among the intellectuals, being killed, kidnapped or threatened. Life was also hard for Yasmin's two sons.
My children, when they were in Iraq, they usually stay at home. They avoided to go outside to play or something because there was a kidnapping of children or something like this. So most of the time they stayed indoor, yeah, because they are afraid, yeah.
Yasmin and her two boys travelled to Australia by plane and applied for refugee status, which they won 6 months later. Adapting to Australian life was hard at first, but despite the challenges, her impression of Australia was positive.
I discovered from the first few days, the Australian people, they are very easygoing people, they are very helpful. And I'm lucky I met all the people that they are very helpful for me.
The volunteer organisation Canberra Refugee Support, or CRS, has helped Yasmin and her boys to settle into their new life here. This has involved helping find schools for Mohammed and Abdullah, enrolling Yasmin in English and driving lessons, and offering financial assistance so Yasmin can retrain as a doctor. Yvonne McLeod is Yasmin's CRS mentor and finds her work very rewarding.
When it's successful, when there is a result, when we see that people, like Yasmin and her boys, when we can see that the boys are so happy and they feel safe and they're loving school and they are loving being Australian.
Every single activity in my life, they know about it. I keep bothering them because sometimes I cannot do something or... So I keep calling Janine or Evol. or Jeff McPherson. Yeah, they are wonderful team.
Yasmin is surprised at how quickly her two sons are adapting to life in Australia. Both Mohammed and Abdullah are attending Canberra schools and taking part in other sporting and musical activities. 14-year-old Mohammed played in a premiership-winning team in a Canberra Rugby League competition after only learning how to play this year. 12-year-old Abdullah, or Dewey, as he likes to be called, enjoys listening to classical music and hopes to learn to play piano.
I was surprised when I first came here, they start to like everything and they adapted so quickly. And I keep frequently asking them, did you miss Iraq or something? They say, no, we didn't miss anything. And they like to be Aussie. And I don't know why. When they first came, they love the people and everything, and they have friends there. And they are happy. Yeah.
CRS's Yvonne McLeod is also surprised at how quickly the boys are accepting Australia as home.
The night that I think Iraq and Australia were playing in a match, and foolishly, my partner and I thought that the boys would be really watching the home team, Iraq. No way. They had Australian flag tattoos all over them and they'd been cheering the Australian team on.
The boys have also picked up a lot of the Australian lingo, often teasing their mum about her Arabic accent. But the family helps each other out and they speak both English and Arabic at home.
Yesterday I went with my old son to the Canberra Hospital Library and I borrowed a book which called Mortage General Practice, and it's a huge book. Mm-hmm. And I said, I want to absorb all that book because I want to pass the exam. And my son looked at me, can you do that? I said, yeah, I like to do it if I have the time.
At night she studies in the living room of the family's apartment. She says the television, the boys and the traffic outside don't distract her because of years studying during Iraq's wars. A year and a half on, Yasmin has no regrets and sees Australia as her permanent home.
Yeah, my origin is Iraqi, but I'm looking forward to be an Aussie. Yeah, I love the idea. I like to be Aussie and participate in that community, which gives me a lot. I feel it was a great decision. Not for me, because it's for my boys. Yeah, because when I see them, they are happy and smile and they are playing. It makes a great relief for me, yeah. Because every time I saw them happy, I feel that this is the right decision that I've ever made in my life. Yeah.
That story by Ashley Leal and Lucy Hinchy. You're listening to 666 ABC Canberra. It's 23 minutes past 10. And if you want to hear more stories like the ones you're hearing on this morning's program, you can head to abc.net.au/Canberra.
To many of us, the enjoyment of music is an essential part of living.
So how do you experience music?
On ABC Radio?
Via the internet?
Or listening to a favourite CD? Let us know by taking part in the ABC's National Music Survey. We want to get a better sense of what music means to you, both here on ABC Radio and through some of the new ways that you're listening. The ABC National Music Survey. Details at abc.net.au/Canberra.
After listening to Yasmin's story, it seems to me that refugees are certainly some of the bravest people, having experienced immense struggles.
Yeah, it must be really difficult to juggle all those commitments as well as studying full time. I mean, I have enough trouble getting my assignments done without having gone through what Yasmin has.
I know what you mean. Well, soon we're going to learn all about some of the options available for refugee students through scholarships and support networks. But first, who here in Canberra is equipped to help them as they adjust to their new lives? Ewan Gilbert spoke to some of the people trying to do just that.
If there's a group that is going to demonstrate the frailty of a health system, it's refugees. There are gaps in the Australian health system everywhere. They will fall into every single gap.
The issues are as varied as the solutions. But situated in an unassuming building just near the Cook Shops is Companion House. And it's home to a team dedicated to assisting the recovery of refugees who have sought safety in the ACT.
I'm Cathy Raglis and I'm Director of Companion House. We work in partnership with other organisations, so we don't want to do everything, but we do want to fill in the gaps and maintain a core purpose. We started off as a health organisation, so that means at the very core of Companion House, you've got a medical service and a counselling service, which are doing individual sort of therapeutic work with survivors of torture and trauma, refugees and asylum seekers mainly.
Lucia Costa arrived in Australia in 2003. fleeing a war zone in South Sudan, she spoke of witnessing malls full of bodies and the rape and torture of her people. Now, a world away in Canberra, they are not things she'll ever forget. But she is thankful for those at Companion House for helping her to move on.
No, when we came and then Centre Care was the people that were looking after us during that time, and then they are the one who introduced us to Companion House for a check-up, medical check-up, and then counselling. Companion House helping us very different area. For example, when we came first, like, we feel isolated. I feel like I don't have that encouragement to talk with Australian people because my English is not good.
Deborah Nelson is a children's counsellor at the house and says it's not just the language barrier in Canberra that can lead to isolation.
I think Canberra, because it is sort of a far-flung, physically sort of far-flung, you can have families that are quite a long way from other sort of families that they know or other members of their community. So that sort of poses a bit of a challenge in Canberra.
The size of Canberra can have its benefits too, but an important issue for many Canberrans, the lack of affordable housing, can be all the more traumatic for newly arrived refugees.
My name's Dr. Christine Phillips and I'm the Medical Director of Companion House's Medical Service. This is actually a really good city for refugees, and because they will fall, not through any fault of their own, but they will fall into all of these gaps between services, to be in a small bounded jurisdiction like ours, just geographically, it makes it a place that's better suited to resettlement. But housing is a really significant problem, and much of the distress that we see in the first 6 months or a year of resettlement is related to difficulty accessing affordable public accommodation for people who are living in incredibly crowded and stressful conditions that sometimes replicate the conditions that they've lived in camps or even worse, or in prison.
Most of them, because they are low income, it is hard for them to rent their house in Canberra. It's very high rent. And then that is why they are all of them, they are just waiting for government house to help them.
For many refugees, the driving force for escaping their homes in the first place is to provide their children with the hope and safety of a better life.
But if a child has experienced those sorts of terrible experiences from a very, very young age, in fact, sometimes they don't have the basic building blocks for resilience that other children have. And that can make them a lot more vulnerable, especially when they're in very new situations, like a school situation or something like that.
We'll take the school's example, and a really simple example a lack of interpreter use. Some schools are very good at it, but many are not. And trying to make sure that the ACT school system has a much better policy for everyone and better sort of funding for everyone to be able to access interpreters when they need them, because otherwise schools actually can't communicate with parents and you start to get a real sort of breakdown in communication, in intergenerational relations. It just doesn't work well.
Currently in our school system, you can get individual learning support, but the ways that you get it are very restricted. So it's not just because you're a refugee student, you get extra help. And so they fall through the gaps in terms of the resourcing that we're able to give them. Now, schools sometimes step up and they pay out of their own budgets for the additional help for these children.
Those gaps are felt in refugee healthcare as well. From a lack of doctors to a lack of understanding, the wealth of problems experienced by refugees mean healthcare workers are always catching up.
And if there's one thing that marks refugee health, it's that it varies all the time. There's nothing biological about being a refugee. If there's a group that is going to demonstrate the frailty of a health system, it's refugees. There are gaps, and there are gaps in the Australian health system everywhere, but because of the odd state-funded federal divide that we have, they will fall into every single gap.
So, while the broader debates continue to rage up on the hill, it's the work of organisations like Companion House that continue to ensure the recovery of refugees who have sought safety here in the ACT.
I visit Sydney and then I went to Melbourne also. But like Canberra is, for parents, special for parents, is a very, very nice place for the kids. And then like people here, they are very friendly. Even the neighbourhood, they will sometimes say hi and then chat with us in the door, this kind of things. And then we feel safety. These are the important things. We feel very safety in Canberra.
the families that come here, on the whole, have very positive experiences of Canberra's and Canberrans' willingness to help. But my experience of working with the children is actually, the children are very open, they're very enthusiastic, and they're very, very willing to learn from us. And I think they'd like us to learn from them too, you know? So to sort of take that as one of their great strengths when they come into this community. And I think that they, on that basis, they've got an awful lot to contribute to Canberra.
Mm. We're blessed in the ACT in that it's a jurisdiction that actually has prioritised refugees, I think. And there are a lot of people of very good will here working in the health sector in all these different places.
Even amidst all the negativity and incredible politicisation of this issue over many years now, which is quite dispiriting at times, there's always been a very big interest and a very positive response. So I think we've got a lot to be happy and proud about here, but there is always gaps in systems and things that need to be done. I think that if you're going to look at it a really broad community view, I just continue to encourage people to open your hearts and your minds to people that are arriving as refugees and asylum seekers. Try to put the political debate aside in the sort of concrete interaction we have, not just as services but as neighbours and as fellow parents or all of those kinds, fellow students, all of that kind of stuff. That to be inclusive as a community is going to be the thing that is most healing for people. And it's crucial that we're all aware of that.
That story was produced by Kimberly Granger and Ewan Gilbert, and you're listening to 666 ABC Canberra. For more information on refugees in the local community, make sure you check out the website for Canberra Refugee Support at actrefugee.org.au to learn more or help out.
And the music that you have been hearing under the stories today has been produced by students and teachers from the ANU School of Music. And now it's time to play a piece of some more music. This is a piece that was composed by some of the students over at the ANU School of Music, and it's called Fleet.
That was Fleet by Jonathan Powles, Hannah Murray and James Adler from the ANU School of Music. It's 23 to 11. Now, before the song, we heard about the great efforts of local doctors at Companion House.
Yeah, they're doing so much to help these new members of the community trying to build their new lives. And it really is good to hear a story like this because they do need help in many ways. Refugees do come here wanting to study or retrain in their area of expertise, but this can be really hard as education, as Jamie and I would know, is expensive and time-consuming.
That's right. So this year, Canberra Refugee Support awarded 22 scholarships to refugees and asylum seekers. Benjamin Mutandazi shows us the vital relationship between scholarship donor and recipient.
In Canberra suburbia, it's hard to imagine a life on the run, where one is made to feel like an alien in their own country. But this is what Burmese refugee Pure Pure Mon faced on a day-to-day basis. Pure is a member of the Mon people, an ethnic group from Burma who have been facing violent, often fatal persecution from the ruling military junta. At 25, Pure made the decision to leave her parents in Burma and flee to a Thai refugee camp, where she says that life as a single woman was difficult.
We have no choice. We have no choice to go back. We have to choose a safe place. And at that time, my parent told me, let's talk, take your brother and sister with you and go. We are old, no problem for us. We die here, no problem. Just take your brother and sister. This is the last choice you have. So I need to decide it as soon as possible to get in there and to get somewhere else. So I had to decide. When I in the camp, about 3 years in Bangkok, between Bangkok and together 7 years I lived there. You know, illegal, very dangerous for me because I'm single, I'm young, and then the camps, you can't predict what happened next and what going to be. And when I was in a camp, I'm scared. And because 2 days, okay, good stay, and then the next day, men, they fight each other, the drug. And then some said the Burmese soldier will come and destroy the camp.
After being approved for refugee status, Pure and her family first arrived in Perth 11 years ago. But after hearing about Canberra's ease of living and the city's family-friendly environment, they packed up once again and settled in the ACT. This year, Pure was awarded a scholarship that's enabled her to begin studying a community nursing course at the Canberra Institute of Technology. The scholarship was awarded with the help of women's group Soroptimist International, and president of the Canberra chapter, Sandra Daly, says that meeting Pierre and hearing her story was the catalyst for granting the scholarship.
They came, dined with us and then told us a little about their story of their life here in Australia and told us a little bit about their lives before coming here. And we understand that for many people that's not something that they may wish to dwell on or even politically may be safe for them to do. And meeting a recipient who was from Burma, who had been 7 years, she had been on the Thai-Burma border waiting. And I guess for one, it was about the length of time of the wait and not knowing where you were going to go and the sense of wanting to make the most of her life now that she was here and having enormous aspirations, which I valued enormously, to see what she wants to do in her life now she's here. I made contact recently to see if I could make a contact and that we would set up some sort of like an ongoing monitoring or mentoring, because I really felt that they had a lot to share with us. So I would like to have an ongoing mentoring, monitoring program, and I saw that would be an opportunity that as an individual that I would be matched with her to have an ongoing opportunity to meet with her, just to give her some support, because I think it can be quite a lonely path you walk as you build a new life in a new country.
Pure agrees that receiving the scholarship has allowed her to feel recognised. It's helped her and her family to become a part of the Canberra community.
I'm very happy about that because I'm thinking when I got here, I think I'm lonely, no refugee, no one thinking, not on top and the ground. And then when I award that, I got that award, I think, people's notice, refugee people's, you know, there's so people, there's many, many refugees. So if people noted those people can have a chance, you know. They don't have to be that terrible place. So now they recognize a refugee. So I'm happy.
Pure has first-hand experience of what life can be like in refugee camps. Sanitation is poor and healthcare is lacking at best. Pure hopes that with her qualification in community nursing, she may be able to help others in her community who still live in hope of resettlement.
My goal is I want to go back home. Those people, because when I was there, I saw many people die without medication, especially in the borderline. And there are people die with HIV, AIDS, and another disease, even children, women, and men. So no medication when I was there. And then I thinking I should help them because they give me opportunity, and that's the way I can help those people.
Pure has 2.5 years left of her studies and has a message for those who made this possible.
I want to say thank you very much the first time, and then I want to say that's very wonderful thing they do, that to recognize those people, and you know, then when you got that, you're very proud of yourself. In my country, we say thank you, we not say thank you for from the mouth, we say thank you from the heart.
piece was produced by Benjamin Mutandaze and Siyu Tsao. You're with us on 666 ABC Canberra on a month of Sundays, and we're reporting refugees today. You can get involved by writing on the 666 Facebook wall.
Welcome to Bride's Head, Mr. Ryder. I've been hearing all about you.
He's been lured into a life he never imagined.
Get off me. You don't care about me. All you ever wanted was to sleep with my sister.
And when he falls into a tale of forbidden love...
I think you should leave now, Charles.
A question of faith remains.
What does Charles Ryder really want?
The movie-length adaptation, Bride's Head Revisited, tonight, ABC One.
You're about to hear a truly inspirational story, and here to tell us a bit about it is our fellow student, Mel Evans. Hey, Mel.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, thank you. Now, what did you first think when you were given the project a couple of months ago?
Initially, I was pretty daunted because coming from a little country town, I really hadn't had any contact with a refugee or really anyone that spoke a foreign language. So I was quite nervous about having to not only find someone who is or was a refugee, but to then actually speak to them and get a good story about it. But I was excited. It was a good challenge.
I think a lot of people were confused at the start, but also excited. Yeah, definitely. So you spoke to a student from UC, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so how did you get in contact with her?
Well, initially, my partner Brock and I, we were speaking to a different refugee, but that story all fell through. So at the last minute, I sneakily spoke to a girl in my class who was from Sudan, and luckily, very luckily, she agreed to speak to us.
So. Excellent. And what can you tell us about her?
So Yaa is 22 and she goes to the University of Canberra and studies international studies. And so she has been over here for a few years now and hopes to then go back over to Sudan in the future and use her degree.
Excellent.
In some way.
Was she easy to, like, did she open up a lot when you spoke to her and was easy to talk to?
Surprisingly, yeah. I was a little nervous to see what she'd say, whether she'd speak at all about her past, but she was more than willing to give us all the details. It was a really amazing story.
And this is Yaa's story.
It gave me that strength to, you know, like, to go extra mile to do something more than any other person who never experienced hardship, because you don't want to go back to that situation again. So I think that's gave me opportunity to think about life and the future in general. My name is Yaa Young and I came to Australia in November 2003. I have been here now for about 8 years. I first came with my uncle and my auntie, and then later I found out my mother was in a camp, like in a different camp that I was in.
At 5, Yaa Young was separated from her parents and living in a Kenyan refugee camp with her aunt and uncle. Almost a decade later, Yaa discovered her mother was living in another Kenyan refugee camp, and amazingly, they were reunited, given humanitarian visas, and made their journey to Australia together.
Probably I don't remember much about it because I was really young. I grew up in Kenya as a refugee, so probably I left with my mother. By then I was a little mature than when I was in Sudan, so I remember much about the camp. When we started in the camp, it was a really, really harsh weather, and it was really hard settling in as well, because there were no facilities, no clean water, no food. It was kind of really, really hard. Imagine at that age. Yeah, it's really, really hard. After that got better, the UN came in and started supporting refugees, like providing with food and water, sanitations and school, building school and medical centres.
Although she had to leave behind many friends and family, Yaa is positive her journey was a blessing.
Oh, I was very excited. I was so happy that I was going to have an opportunity to go to school if I want to, or if I have, you know, willing to do it, then I'll be able to do what I want. Because as you see, like, Australia is so different from third world countries. There's like freedom to do things that you can't do in a refugee camp. You know you're leaving people that you care about and people you love. You'd be happy to, you know, go somewhere, do something for yourself. If there's something you can do for them, you'd be happy to do that too. So, yeah, it was hard at the same time, but, you know, excited.
In 2007, Yaa enrolled in a Bachelor of International Studies at the University of Canberra.
What made me want to go to university? Just was doing it for fun, but yeah, expand my mind a little bit, and yeah. At uni, I started here in 2007, but like been doing like part-time, sometimes full-time, so yeah, taking my time. And because English is my second language, it's kind of, I have to take it slowly than any other Australian student, so yeah. But, you know, you have to do it according to what I have been through, you know. This would be like, you know, another tough thing that I can go through and find a way to do it, you know. If I have been through all that, through hunger, through everything else, why can't I do this? Now I can find a way to make it, so yeah.
The Student Equity and Access Office at UC takes care of new students with a refugee background. Laurie Boll is the manager of the program.
We have a migrant and refugee student support program, and so prior to each semester we receive a list from admissions about the incoming refugee students or students on a humanitarian visa, and those students are contacted by our office and invited to a specialized orientation session. They're also made aware of the refugee student support program, so a small amount of textbook assistance is possible. They're invited to be part of the mentoring program, and oftentimes we find that students from any background, but predominantly students from refugee backgrounds, may be hesitant to ask for help. They may not be aware of assistance. They may not be aware that assistance is offered specifically to them, and they may not want to actively seek that out and whatnot.
You really need to integrate and live as they do, but sometimes when you treat it different, you kind of, you know, yeah, I feel like an outsider.
As a refugee, Yaa faces many day-to-day challenges on top of her studies.
If you have limited communication with people, like my mother doesn't have so much, so most of the time I have to take her some places that she can't go by herself. So do a lot of things in the household, or like shopping or everything else that would be needed. So yeah, that kind of thing. So kind of place like heavy duty on me, but yeah, it's okay.
Being a refugee has given Yaa the determination to not only finish her university degree, but to travel the world and eventually return to Sudan.
I'd be happy to work with UNHCR as well, because of whatever I have seen. If I could make a change or like do something different, that would be really nice, because I've seen a lot of things that a lot of people go through. And what I have been through as well, I know how it feels.
Yaa's story was produced by Mel Evans and Brock Korf. It's 12 to 11 on 666 ABC Canberra on a month of Sundays. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Jamie. And that was a really interesting story from Mel. And our next story is just as interesting as well. It's that of a human rights activist from Zimbabwe who escaped after being hunted by the Mugabe regime. Thomas McCoy has this story.
Take your time and listen to my story. Take your time and listen to my song.
Felix, sitting here in peaceful Canberra, it's kind of hard to imagine what life might be like in Zimbabwe. Can you paint a bit of a picture for us?
Zimbabwe at the present moment is a country characterized by rampant corruption, political unrest, and very serious abuse of human rights, and it continues unabated. And the people that are supposed to be protecting the rest of the population are actually the perpetrators of those abuses.
Have you experienced any human rights abuses yourself?
I experienced beatings and threats. And in this particular case, we were assaulted in front of the kids at a school where I was teaching. This was because we had been accused of influencing the people to reject a draft constitution that had been drafted by the Mugabe government in order to keep Mugabe in power, to make him a president for life. And after the assault, we went to report to the police, and the police could not help us. Instead, they just said, if we play with fire, we would get burnt. I, for one, was assaulted as well. I lost two of my front teeth, and I survived by pretending to have just passed out.
Felix, have members of your family or people you know been affected by that as well?
Yeah, members of my family were affected. We had joined the Movement for Democratic Change, and it was discovered that there was a register. And when that was discovered, the ZANU-PF people went on a retributive spree to hunt down all those people whose names were on that register. So after a tip-off from one member of the community, I fled to the city. And when they couldn't find me, they went for my family, beat up my parents, and destroyed my rural home and burnt up even my parents' houses.
That must have been hard to deal with.
It was very difficult to deal with.
Why would anyone become a human rights activist in a country like Zimbabwe?
Sometimes you are left with no choice. If you do not do anything, it doesn't help the situation. If you do something, still you experience the same things that you would have experienced if you had not done anything at all. Because you watch something happening, you watch those that are close to you being harassed, being beaten up, being tortured, and the only way to go is to do something to fight that system.
Felix, you've told us some stories that a lot of us living here in Canberra can probably barely imagine, but there have been more positive aspects to your life, and you're an ex-teacher. And since you've been here in Australia, you've been doing teaching, and particularly you've been running African drumming workshops to promote mental health for Belconnen Community Service. And not long ago, you might remember, we went to one of your sessions and talked to a few of the people, and it went like this. We're here at the Canberra Dance Theatre, where five women and three men are sitting in a circle, all facing each other, and each person sitting behind a tall African skin-covered drum called a djembe, which people play with their bare hands. And Felix is leading the drumming circle.
For your benefit, the rhythm that we are learning is called chitekuteku. It's a traditional rhythm from Zimbabwe. If you want to settle in any one of those rhythms that we have done, either the... Or, if you are more confident, then you can do.
Afterwards, we asked people what they thought of the class.
The beauty of it is when you're doing it as a group, like today, once everyone's got like a bit of a rhythm to it, you really feel a sense of community. You sort of feel tuned in with everyone else there.
It's very empowering once you get it, and yeah, I'm a spiritual person, so I find it very spiritual as well.
Since Felix has come in, he's been absolutely, you know, a wealth of knowledge, of course, and the people, I think, really respond incredibly well to Felix because he's such a likeable person.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice.
Yeah, they certainly enjoyed the sessions, Felix. And what do you actually find the most satisfying about teaching drumming?
Watching my students developing, especially those that are drumming for the first time. At first, they are very polite with their drum, as if they are going to break the membrane. And then just watching them gain confidence to become these accomplished drummers, it really gives me satisfaction.
Felix, apart from being involved in teaching and the arts, you've also worked as a journalist in Zimbabwe. And what is the media situation there?
The media situation is pretty bad. Journalists are really at risk, especially if they are very ethical and trying to do their job in reporting issues as they are. There has been a lot of purging of journalists, and international journalists have not been spared either. Whenever a journalist's cover was blown, they risked being abducted, they risked being tortured or even being killed. There are journalists that have been killed in their line of duty.
Felix, you've got a clear love of music and performing and teaching and dancing. What other loves do you have in your life?
I enjoy playing the mbira. The mbira is an African musical instrument that has been there for thousands of years. And it is made out of metal and wood, just some wires that are bashed, and they are fixed on a soundboard, and you just play by plucking.
Could I get you to play something for us?
Yes, with pleasure. Take your time and listen to my story.
story. Take your time and listen to my song. Let's make this world a better place, a better place for everyone. Let's change the world. Let's change the world.
Felix, that was great. Tom, what makes the mbira such a special instrument for you?
I love it. At one time, it saved my life.
How was that?
This was during the time that I was working undercover to interview victims of political violence in Zimbabwe. And sometimes we had to go through makeshift roadblocks. So at one time, I remember carrying mbira with my mate. And when we got to the roadblock, in order to be allowed to pass through, we had to recite their slogans, we had to sing their revolutionary songs, and to the accompaniment of the mbira. And the first person to dance was their leader, and the others followed suit. And we were allowed to pass through that roadblock without any hassles, and they even gave us an escort to pass through another roadblock. For that reason, I love the mbira.
It's a fantastic story. So you changed their mood completely. Was it hard for you to play their songs and chant their slogans?
Chanting their slogans and singing their songs, I must say, was difficult because I did that against my beliefs and against my principles, but this was a matter of life and death.
Felix, what are the main differences between living in Australia and living in Zimbabwe?
There's so much peace in Australia and in Zimbabwe. At the present moment, there is no rule of law.
Do you have any hope for the future?
I have hope for the future because I believe any situation comes to an end. But being here, I would like to make the best of this opportunity that if I should be granted permission to stay in Australia, I would like to get back my life again. I would like to open a whole new chapter where I can help develop myself and develop those around me and help even change some of the people that I come in contact with and influence them positively and close this said chapter of my past life as an activist.
Felix, thank you very much.
You are most welcome.
You're listening to a very special episode of Month of Sundays on 666 ABC Canberra. You can get involved in the conversation on Twitter if you like. Just use the hashtag ReportingRefugees to become connected to everyone involved in the project, including all the students who produced the awesome stories today and more.
Recently, we gave you guys the opportunity to put up questions on the Our Say website. It could have been any question you had about refugees, boat people, asylum seekers, or asylum seeker policy. The questions were then voted on, and we now have a top five of these questions that you'd like to see addressed. And here's one of them.
How many countries should illegal immigrants be allowed to ignore on their way to Australia? If they ignore even one, then by any definition other than that used by the UN, they aren't actually refugees. So why does anyone enable these weasel words and the swamping of due process by immigration criminals? No, sorry to bring the common sense, but hey.
So that question and others will be answered after the news. We'll have Alan Asher, Kaz Coleman and Richard Toll on our panel of refugee experts. And they'll be discussing that question and others. So you might want to stay tuned and see what you think of what they have to say.
Yeah, it should be really actually quite interesting, Ash. The panel will be headed by Ashley Alil, who was another student from the University of Canberra, who actually was talking in a package earlier that we had.
Yeah, her package was included, and she'll be the head of the panel. So she spoke to all three of the people on there to see what they had to say. She asked them all five questions, and yeah, it should be really interesting to see what they had to come up with.
It should be very interesting. And if you do want to get involved in the conversation further, as I've mentioned Twitter before, but there's also our Facebook wall and things like that as well.
Yeah, and a lot of the stories that you're hearing today are going to be up online on the ABC website, so you can read more about those stories and the full interviews.
And that can be seen at abc.net.au. In the next hour, we've got some amazing stories about street soccer, some female health for refugees.
And then we'll also have our panel, as we've just mentioned, as well as some more music from students at the ANU School of Music. They're by teachers and students, and they were produced in response to some of the packages.
But first, time for the news.
Switch on to ABC Digital Radio. You can now tune in to 5 ABC stations as part of Canberra's digital radio trial. Expand your radio choice. For more information, head to abc.net.au/Canberra.